to Hack Your Leadership, the podcast that explores career development insights in the insights and market research industry. I'm your host, Lyubov Ruchinska, and today we have a very special guest joining us. He is a Vice President, Consumer Insight Market Insights for South Asia Cluster in Unilever. He has been working with Unilever for more than 17 years and work across different markets like India, Brazil, Southeast Asia, Australia, and Europe. Please welcome Nitesh Pridayashi. Hello, Nitesh. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and pleasure is all mine to be here. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. First of all, I would like to clarify if I pronounce your name correctly.
Yeah, so you pronounced my name absolutely correct. It's just that you didn't need to pronounce my second name, because Priyadarshi in local language or Hindi in India means handsome and good looking, which I guess it's obvious in my case. Yeah. Having said that, you know, as in the research world, this is important to have benchmark and action standards, because in isolation, anything could be good. But if you put a benchmark and action standard, then you get to know the real worth.
Fantastic. I know that in India, many names means many things that makes it very meaningful. And it's a good joke and good comparison. But anyway, today, the purpose of today is to talk about your leadership style and your story, because you managed to achieve remarkable results in your field. And I'm sure that everyone who will listen to us when it would be shared, so they would be eager to learn your secrets of your success. So I would like to start the conversation with a typical question. So can you please share with us three elements of your career success that have been key to standing out and achieving these results?
Yeah. So thanks for this question. I think rather than three elements, if I can put three buckets of things which I feel has worked for me in the past 25 years that I've been working, 17 plus years with Unilever and then 7 years with different agencies. Yeah. I think one bucket is a word called empathy in English, which is very important. And when I talk about empathy, the reason I'm saying is bucket because it's empathy at three levels. Empathy with consumers, because it's important to empathize with consumers' pain point. What is the real challenge? What is the real pain point that a product or a service is going to solve? Yeah. The second thing is about empathy with the market in terms of empathizing with what the market challenge is. Yeah. Is it an inflationary context? It is a deflation context. Is it a COVID, which, a challenge which everyone was going through? What is in the external world, and what are the challenges which is important, and how do you empathize with, which means in a way to understand it well rather than just do it in isolation. And the third one that I often talk about is empathy with the business partners or with the colleagues that we work with. Because when you have a great idea or an insights, you may feel it's great because it's your baby. You have uncovered it. You have unearthed it. But it may not be relevant for the business problem that we are solving. So therefore, if you don't empathize with the business partner's business problem, then the idea or the insight that we are presenting may not be in the context in which it is going to work for the business. Yeah. So therefore, it's very important. The first thing that I talk about is empathy, be it with empathizing with consumers, market, or business partners. The second one is something which I think is very important for any researcher, which is all about curiosity. Yeah. And I add experiences also to curiosity. So therefore, one thing that you will see if you visit my LinkedIn page, I have been really lucky and I would say quite grateful in my long career to have worked in different markets. Yeah. And that also happened because I've always been open to the idea of taking the risk to go and explore something new. So when I was in research company, I was working in Morocco, Casablanca. Then in Unilever, I worked across markets, as you rightly mentioned, whether it's Brazil, Southeast Asia, Australasia, UK, Europe, and back in Mumbai again. So therefore, it's not easy always to pack up your bag and say, okay, let me be ready for the next experience in life, because it does come with its own challenges, and both at a personal level as well at a professional level. So, but I feel, to do well in your career, more and more experiences that you gather actually makes you take better decision and you know, gives you better perspective or broader perspective, let me put it that way, in terms of how to manage things here. And that is also keeps your curiosity away. And as they say that, you know, when you're a researcher, then curiosity is very important because you need to keep asking that question, why it is happening, how can we solve it? And that's very critical. The third one is a word which I feel is very important in today's world, is called humility. And I do say that because, you know, many a times we think that, okay, we have a great idea. Many a times we think that we have done a great work, yeah. But then we have to be humble about the context that none of this, we do it alone, yeah. There is a lot of people and team. And not only I'm talking about team that work in Insights, but it's a cross-functional team. It's an almost like an enterprise approach where different functions, when a product is onto the shelf, it is not because one Insight was unearthed, because there was an Insight unearthed, somebody made a product, somebody put the right ingredients, somebody did the right source the right things from supply chain, somebody did the right packaging, somebody had a right idea to make a great ad, and then finally, you know, somebody sold it to the customer to put it on the shelf. So therefore, when we think about great work, it's never done in isolation. So we should be humble about the fact that you know, any success that we see around product success is the work of many people coming together. So if I was to just recap, empathy, experiences and curiosity, and the third is humility.
Fantastic. I think there are lots of insights in each of the direction, and I would be super glad to go deep in each of the topic, and maybe we will pick up the risks first. Because especially in today's world, we are living in such a fast-changing environment where the growth is associated with risks. Because growth is the enemy of the stability, so you need always to expose yourself to the new things, and probably curiosity is the right motivator of doing that. Can you please share more about the risks that you took in particular in the past that significantly influenced your career development?
Yeah, so one of the risks that you have to take is that, you know, you cannot wait when you are in a research, 20 years, 30 years, and when you are a pure researcher, then you always think about, let's make this product only when we are 100% sure that it will perform well in the market. Yeah, I think gone are the days, nothing can perform 100%, because from the time that you've thought about an idea, and you put the product onto the shelf, the market context may have changed because things are moving so fast today that you really can't say that, okay, I'm 100% sure that this will do. There's one of my business partner used to say that many a times when research comes with a great idea, you know, sometimes it, you know, does well, but many a times it fails, or if I was to put in a different word, you learn, yeah? So therefore, we should be open to the idea of saying that when we are putting anything onto the market as an insight, also as an insight professional, there are likelihood that this will lead us to win, rather than saying that, oh, you know, we have done a sick testing, significant testing at 99%, it is definitely going to win. That does not happen. It's about the direction. Is it in the right direction to win or not? Yeah. Sometimes to get 99% significantly right product, you may take time and effort, which is not worth by the time the product comes onto the shelf. And therefore, I feel one of the risks that we should take, and I personally feel I have taken a lot, is saying that, okay, am I in the right direction? Which means, is it 70% right? Is it 80% right? Is it more than 50% right? So that I'm confident that, okay, the likelihood of this product or this insight leading to a product or a communication or a service idea is definitely going to do well. Yeah. And therefore, one of the risks that I've often taken is that I've not waited for things to be 100% right. As to that, okay, as long as I feel 70% directionally, it's in the right direction, there are more people talking good about this product than not good about this product, I think we should be able to take that risk to put it on the shelf. Yeah. The second thing is, you cannot, you know, I personally feel from my experiences in different markets, we cannot bet on one thing. So if suppose you have five ideas and you say, oh, let's select the one best idea, and this is the only thing we are going to do this year, you know, the chances is that you may fail. So therefore, you have to bet on the ideas. So if you have five good ideas, put three of them in the market, and then make sure that you are monitoring those ideas in the market and making the on the fly, making the changes or adapting those ideas, the way it is working, so that one of them definitely succeed. rather than thinking that, okay, let's, you know, put one idea and I know that I've done all the tests and it will succeed. So that is again about how do you, you know, increase the base so that there is, and the reason I say this, because even when you look at consumer and market, there are a lot of things which keep evolves. Yeah? The consumer taste may evolve, consumer preferences may evolve, market context may change. Nobody thought that COVID will come and one day we were all facing it in front of us. The competition may have done something and the market context may have changed. There must be a competition all of a sudden on a shelf which we had not considered. Therefore, it's important that we go with many ideas and then on the shelf, we develop the ideas which start getting traction from the consumer and the customers. And therefore, again, you take the risk, not with one, but with many, so that the chances of succeed is again higher. So these are two of the risks that I've often worked on, rather than just betting on one thing and saying that, oh, this is 100% correct and it will do well. Because many a time when I have done this, I have failed because it has not necessarily done well, in spite of doing all the research.
And like building on that, I think that the risks might be also associated with taking the risk to show the company or your business partners completely unique way of doing things and trying to defend the space, because I see that insights needs to be the game changers and they need to really provoke the conversation and to be kind of a lighthouse in suggesting where the growth lies. And in this particular case, you need to take the risks to defend your idea. So I know that you have one of the greatest superpower in managing the conversation and holding, like, you know, the debate and managing difficult partners. So what is your experience in this field? So how you are converting difficult dialogues into long-term strong relationships?
So I think just to add to what you were saying, you know, this risk, you can also put it in a different world called experimentation, because, you know, we often say that if you want to change the course of the brand, if you want to get a different results, we can't be doing the same thing. If you do the same thing, you will get the same results. So therefore, if you want a different result, you have to experiment, you have to pilot, you have to do different things to be able to say what will work better, because things keep evolving as we discussed just now. So therefore, you know, if we have to rephrase it, then it's not about risk, but it's about experimenting and trying out different things to say which one will work best among the consumer and the market and the customer. Yeah. And as you rightly said, when you have such idea, when you're talking about experimenting with a different idea or a different way of researching or even different insights, then there is always that, you can hit that roadblock with the business partner saying that, oh, no, I'm not wanting to take that risk or I'm not sure about it. Yeah. And how do you then have those discussions where you build that confidence among your business partners to say that, okay, yeah, there is a strength in this idea and we should definitely move ahead. Yeah. I think there are three aspects which has personally worked in my case. One is about provocation. Yeah. And when you're talking about provocation, it's not about just telling them that, okay, what you are doing is not right and what I'm doing is right, but also provoking based on numbers. Yeah. So therefore you have data to say that, okay, why this mix will work best, or you have data from some parallel market. It has done very well in some other markets. And you say that, okay, how in the context where it is happening similar in this market, we have already seen in a developed economy or in some other part of the world and it has done well. So you get informations and data to be able to help and convince and provoke that if you don't do it, things will only get worse. So almost not look at the past, but predict the future, that if we continue doing what we are doing today, and if we don't experiment and try something new, then the situation in terms of the growth could be worse. So therefore, that could be a provocation. Yeah. Second could be an inspiration, which is again a kind of a other side of the provocation coin, where rather than telling them that things will go worse, you show them almost the opportunity that today we are growing by 5%. If we were to do this experiments and pilots and, you know, try these things, our growth may go from 5 to 10% or 5 to 7%. And the reason why I believe that this would happen is because, you know, in some other category, something similar. So you build that knowledge from parallel work, from parallel markets and other markets to do that. So you provoke, you inspire. The third thing which I personally feel works very well is that, you know, when you make it personal, when you put it in the context of what business partner wants to hear, but still put the right thing in front of him or her. So if the business partner has sometimes mentioned that why, you know, he or she feels that taste is very important in, say, foods category, and then whether you talk about healthy food or non-healthy food, we can't compromise on taste, yeah? So then when you're presenting your idea, you make sure that you refer to that business partner's context, say that, you know, in some other meeting, you mentioned about taste, and, you know, this idea from the point that I'm talking about today would actually have such a great taste that irrespective of the ingredient story, it will not compromise on that. So therefore, you make it personal in the context that he or she mentioned in some other things. So therefore, then it goes back to my first point. The moment you do that, then you're empathizing with the business partner, both personally what he or she has said or the business challenge that they are facing. Similarly, one more example of, the last one is, suppose it's a pricing context, correct? It's very easy to do an elastic, price elastic study and say that, okay, increase the price or decrease the price. Let's take the other one, the decrease the price here. But if there is a bottom line challenge, you can't do it in isolation, correct? So therefore, it's important to work with the finance team and the context of the business that where is that brand, bottom line challenge and say that, okay, if you were to really decrease the price and take further hit in this brand, where are the opportunities to take price up and increase the bottom line so that as a category across brands in a company, we are still positive rather than negative. So we are still incremental. We may not be on a brand of the company, but we are positive as far as the total company is concerned here. So therefore, how do you make the discussion again in holistic rather than in isolation about a brand and also do it in isolation? But get other other party involved, like a finance, media, to make your point stronger.
No, you are totally spot on, especially talking about that our work in isolation will never pay off, because I don't like when someone says that we are supporting function, because we can be supporting function, but the ideal way of talking about the insights as the engine of the growth, as a lighthouse, like more proactive, less reactive role when we are taking leadership to showcase the opportunities for growth. But we never would be succeeding in isolation from the business partners. And that's why I would like to also probe on the first point that you start talking about, saying that empathy is very critical. And here I want to learn more about how critical is it when you are building your relationship within your team, within your team members. So how you apply these principles of the leadership?
Yeah, so you're giving me a great point on empathy with the team. So probably when I was talking about three concept of empathy, empathy with consumers or customers, empathy with market, and empathy with business partners. Actually, there's a fourth element to it, which is coming to my mind now that you said it, is empathy with your team. Yeah, so you understand your team context and team challenges so that, nobody does work in isolation. You work with a larger team. So for the team to deliver, if I have to make a product which is absolutely, going to meet the consumer needs or customer needs, then you need to first understand and empathize with what the consumer and customer pain point is, correct? Then only you would make a product which will solve it. Similarly, empathy with the team is critical, because when you empathize with the personal context, and every member in the team is different. Yeah, they may have a different personal context, they may have a different, work context, they may have a different style of working or way of working. So if we understand individuals' personal context, then the way you can, make sure that your style of working can be personalized to his or her need to get the best out of that individual. Because one size, fitting all does not hold any true. So therefore, this world is all about customization and personalization. So therefore, customization and personalization, not only in the mixes that we make or the product that we make, but customization and personalization and how we deal with our team members. Yeah, and we pick up the strengths and weaknesses of everyone so that together we are, 1 + 1 = 11, like the whole is greater than the sum is greater than the individual performances, because the whole is much greater than the, sum of the parts. Yeah. And I think that is very critical. So therefore, that empathy, I feel, is very critical. And there is a important difference between slight difference between empathy and sympathy. When it gets to sympathy, then nobody likes it. Nobody wants to be sympathized with. but everyone wants to be empathized with, which is understood. People want to be understood. People want to understand the relative context so that together we can do a much better job. Very much like consumers. Consumer doesn't want us to do a favor by giving him or her a product, or a customer doesn't want a favor. They want that you understand my challenge and then you give me a solution through a product or a service which meets that need. So therefore, that empathy is very critical and across all touch points that you talk about. And, you know, one more thing that you mentioned, which is so critical today from an empathy, from a business point, business partner point of view, that as researchers, we always feel that our job is to uncover insights. Yeah. And we feel that, okay, once we have got the great insights onto the table, our job is done. And I always, feel that that's probably not the end of a job, but a start of the job. So when we have uncovered insights, it's not the end of us consumer and insights person, but it is start of the job of a consumer and insight person to now say that, okay, how do I make this insights into a product or a communication idea or a service that gets onto into the market and then leads to the growth for the company. So therefore, we keep talking about things like insights for growth. So that journey from insights to growth will only happen when you inspire or provoke your company, your business partners to work and action those insights and ideas to get into, onto the shelf, a product or a service which is better than competition and therefore gets you growth. So therefore, we should always think about, once we have got the insights, what are some of the things we need to learn and get into to influence the ecosystem around us to get growth for the company.
That's amazing, especially the word influence. I think that's very critical because we need to influence others to consider the opportunity that we are projecting, but also act on the opportunity, because if only we drive the awareness of the opportunity, it's not enough. So we need to drive action to make sure that our insights are actionable and impactful for the business. We talked a lot about the values, and I'm curious to ask, when you were developing your own leadership style, did you have any role model from the past or from the present who has inspired your approach to leadership?
Yeah, so one role model actually had, I have still the only person that I probably hero worship actually one in home and one outside home. So there are two people that I hero worship. One is my dad, because in a world, especially in Indian context, where masculinity was big and societies were driven by more by the male alpha, by the male society rather than by the female society. And I think I saw that at home very different, where both my mom and dad were like equal partners to everything that was happening at a home front. Yeah. So that actually made me, one of the first learning that I had while I was growing up with my siblings that, okay, there's nothing like male domination or female domination. There is partners working together to get to something which is very important as a family. So that was something which made me much more humble as a human being to be able to say that, okay, there is equity and equality that should always play at home rather than, different thing. When I look outside of my home, then there's one person that I hero worship. Cricket is big in India, and I'm sure it's not a sport that gets played everywhere in the world, so not everyone knows about it, but cricket is big in India, a game which is played with a bat and ball. And one of the person there is Rahul Dravid, who is, again, a great cricketer, but at the same time, he was absolutely humble about his achievement in the game of cricket by saying that, and also very a great team player, saying that, it's not about what records that I achieve, the number of runs I make or the number of catches I have taken. It's important that the runs that I have made has let the team win. It's important that the catches I have taken let the team win. So he would always talk about not personal record, but about the team won. So if the team has not won, and if I have scored, say, 100 runs, it has very little meaning, because that 100 run, even though has been done with all the passion, still has not led to a team winning. So therefore, it has little meaning. Then I have made score only 20 runs, but if 20 runs has led to a team winning, then that holds more importance than scoring 100 runs. So these are the two role models. My dad, who spoke about equity and equality at home, and Rahul Dravid, who spoke about the humbleness about what you have achieved individually, does not carry weight as long as the team does not win.
That's very inspiring. Thank you for sharing these stories and these advices with us. So now, as we have to wrap up this engaging conversation, I would like to ask you one last question that is typical for all the podcasts, Hack Your Leadership Style. What you give as an advice to insights professionals aspiring to become influential leaders in the insights and market research industry?
So I think one is probably a summary of what we were discussing, that as insights professional, don't stop thinking yourself as an insight person only. Think yourself as growth drivers. Think yourself as how I can use my insights to bring growth in the business. Yeah. How if the company is growing at 2%, how can I grow it at 4%? What insights can help it grow at 4%? If the company is growing at 6%, what insights can help it at growth? So therefore, talk about opportunities, talk about areas. Therefore, as insight professional, yes, we are all called insights professional, but think yourself as a growth hacker rather than an insight hacker. So how do you help opportunities for growth? That is one thing which is very critical. Second, while you are doing this, be humble about the fact that even though we have a great insights, this insights would not lead to growth if we don't work in an enterprise approach across different functions, across different individuals, and across a larger team. Because none of this great products and mixes and solutions and services can be done alone. So it's a teamwork. The team has to win, and therefore we don't have to worry about who gets the credit. If the company wins, everyone gets the credit. If the company loses, even if you get individual credit, it has little meaning. So therefore, it's a second thing is that. And third, of course, is very important that while you are uncovering insights for growth, while you're working in a absolutely team environment to drive that growth, make sure that you're enjoying the process and having fun. Yeah, because if you take things too seriously, then probably things are not going to happen, because then you may probably kill it, or you may over analyze and think it over. It's important that while you're doing it, everything, you also have fun in the process, so that it keeps the atmosphere light. And when the atmosphere is light, is more friendly. And when the atmosphere is more friendly, you do more, as you know.
I think that statistically, fun and engagement and excitement highly correlates with the success. So if you choose the work that you like, you literally will never work a single day. So thank you so much, Nitish, for sharing your wisdom and experiences with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure for having you on our podcast. And that concludes today's episode of Hack Your Leadership Style. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with us and gained valuable insights on effective leadership. Join us next month for another exciting episode. Until then, stay curious and keep hacking your leadership. Thank you.